I have to be able to not focus on any single thing in my life in order for my life to continue functioning. This is We Have Concerns. Hi, Jeff Cannata.
Hi, Anthony Carboni.
Hello, concerned citizens. You know, Jeff, birds.
Ugh. Are they up to their old antics again?
They're a bunch of fucking pranksters. We know
they
this.
Are such pranksters.
We know this. Their birds are up to no good. Now, a lot of people are going to tell you these days, Jeff, the birds aren't real. That's a big deal with people these days.
Yeah, I'm not. But I don't buy that. We've seen too much evidence of their pranks to think they're not real.
Here's the thing. I would absolutely believe that birds aren't real if I did not think that was something that the birds were trying to make us believe.
Exactly. It's all part of their plot. The greatest trick the devil ever pulled. Make you think it didn't exist.
The greatest trick the double decker devil ever pulled.
You know what they say about birds, Anthony?
What do they say about birds?
Idle birds are the devil's plaything. You know.
But Jeff, why are they never idle then? I think they're the devil's plaything all the time. They're constantly working. They're working against us. They're working against the status quo, which I normally think is fine. I love anybody who tries to upset. Buddy, yeah. Let me tell you something. If I could get rid of one thing.
It would be the status quo?
It would be the fucking status quo.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Quo is the worst fucking status, and that's the one we decided on.
Replace the status quo with something else. You know what you need to do? You need to make the non-status quo the status quo, and then you got a new status quo.
If only it were that easy, my friend. I've been trying all my life. I haven't gotten half as far as a handful of birds.
Yeah.
And that's because they're crafty. They're pranksters.
They are. They're wily.
They are wily. And that's why we're trying to learn as much as we can about them, Jeff. A particularly wily bird that we've talked about before is the Australian magpie.
Oh, that magpie. Up to no good.
Look. We love a blackbird, a crow, a magpie. We love a corvid. We love a Corvidalis multipass. They're smart birds.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, man. I wouldn't be shocked if I woke up one morning and I read a paper in Nature that said birds are building computers now.
Yeah. But
this bird just built a sick gaming rig.
Yeah, exactly. Not to accomplish anything. Not for productivity. No, just to send spam emails.
Birds would build a very expensive gaming PC with a very hard to get video card and then look you directly in the eyes as they push it off a cliff.
Exactly.
They would build it up in their very high nests and then just push it over.
Yeah. They would build a computer just to eBay snipe you and then destroy the thing that they bought.
Oh, yeah. 100%. 100%. They would snipe your Jordans from you.
Yep.
And then when the Jordans came, they would tear them apart and use them as nests. And of course, they bought those Jordans with a stolen credit card.
Stolen credit card. There's no loss for the bird.
There's no loss for the bird.
The bird will steal your identity just as fast as those sneakers.
Listen, every day that you wake up and your social security number is still yours, thank a bird. Because that bird could have had it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. They're always above us, looking down at our PIN numbers.
They can see the PIN numbers, Jeffrey. they can see so far.
Exactly.
They could be so far up in the sky and see the PIN numbers clear as day. They can catch mice from a billion feet.
Yeah.
That's science, a billion feet.
What are they up to now, Anthony?
Well, the Australian magpie, as you know, particularly mischievous bird. These birds are known for just swooping. They're very aggressive sometimes if you get into their area. Australia, you remember an entire Australian town. I believe not even a town. I believe it's a city. I believe it's Melbourne.
Melbourne?
I believe it's Melbourne, Australia. It just has all these magpies. It's just like swooping and duping on people.
Magpies in Melbourne?
I think so. It must be right because my brain wouldn't give me the hardest one to say if it wasn't right. My brain would be like, they're in Sydney, because my brain doesn't want me to look stupid.
Right.
That's not true. My brain wants me to look very stupid. It does it all the time. Anyway, the Australian magpie, particularly mischievous, but also particularly well-loved in Australia. God knows why.
Well,
I guess because they're not spiders.
They're a particular, you wouldn't live in Australia unless you have a little bit of sadomasochism. You know what I'm saying? Everything's trying to kill you there. So, you know.
Bird's just trying to injure you, and that makes Bird your best friend.
Yes. On the hierarchy of danger in Australia, Bird is a friend.
Bird just wants to pickpocket you, you know? That's actually respectable in Australia.
You'll take a little identity theft over, you know, poisonous death spiders.
Yeah, of course I will. Because nobody, listen, we've discussed this before. Nobody's going to get farther than 6 feet with my identity. What are you going to do with my identity? That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Thanks. Pay off my credit cards, idiot.
Oh, thanks. You just stole some debt.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Looks like I got a clean slate. Good for me. Well, magpies, while being particularly smart, Jeff, we don't know tons about them because they are crafty. When they want their privacy, they get it.
Yeah. Well, every time we try to find out something about them, we find out something about somebody else's identity. That's the problem.
That's the problem. We sometimes will track a magpie and we'll be like, this house looks really nice for a magpie.
Yeah.
I don't even think they have houses. And, you know, the other scientist will be like, I don't know. It says right here, this is the magpie's address.
This is the magpie's address. Also, the magpie evidently has been on a Target shopping spree.
Yeah. Pff. Magpie's got so much cool stuff. How does magpie do that? And then we break in because as scientists, we have jurisdiction. We don't need a warrant. We have a we have a knockless warrant.
That's right.
The best and most legal kind of warrant. It's science says that a knock free warrant is very cool. And so we break into this house and it's just a family sitting there.
Yeah.
And we're like, where's the magpie?
We're looking for the bird named Leonard Parkinson. And Leonard's like, that's me. What are you talking about? That's me. I'm a human. And then we go, birds.
And then we leave and Leonard Parkinson pulls off his face.
And it was a bird the whole time.
Bird. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you thought it was going to zig and then it zagged. That's the problem with birds. So we want to track these birds. We want to know what these smart birds are doing. In all honesty, we got to track the smart birds, Jeff.
Yeah.
There's a whole world of smart bird behavior we don't know a good goddamn thing about.
How are we going to track the magpies, though?
Well, that's the thing. The trackers that we normally use for birds are too big to fit on medium to small birds.
Can we make smaller trackers, bro?
As you know. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Is like birds, they're very light. They have to be. They fly. You add a bunch of weight to a bird, and it just sinks like a stone. And then what are you going to do? You'd be like, well, it looks like the bird just walks around in circles in the same 3 feet all day.
How come all the birds we track don't go anywhere?
I don't know. I think there's something wrong with this bird. It's not doing anything.
And then they're all dead on the ground.
It's fucking weird. We got to figure out what's killing all these birds. And every time we keep trying to track them, they just keep dying. We have no more clues. We're no closer to finding this out. They had to create a new and exciting type of bird tracker to do this.
Don't we track friggin' insects? Like, an insect is smaller than a bird. Don't we put trackers on bugs? I've seen stories about bug trackers. So I feel like, what was the holdup on smaller bird trackers?
Well, I think the holdup with smaller bird trackers is you have to be able to track them over large distances. The battery life has to last a particularly long time. With bugs, it's like you're tracking something over, I don't know what, I'm going to say a bug, a very adventurous bug, like Dave Foley in A Bug's Life.
Very
Flick,
adventurous.
The most adventurous of bugs. How far do you think Flick went in his entire adventurous life? Maybe 20 meters, 30 meters?
I think you have an entire trilogy of adventures just in one backyard.
That's what I'm saying. And so you can use low power, lighter trackers, trackers that don't last as long, trackers that don't have as much battery life. And also, you know, if you kill a few bugs by putting trackers on them, people tend to be okay with it. Mm-hmm. You kill birds by putting the wrong tracker on them. That's a whole issue.
All right. Well, that makes sense. You know what I mean? So we've managed to crack the tiny bird tracking. We crack the tracker. What do we do?
We crack the tracker. So what I want you to imagine, Jeff, is a house arrest anklet and a sort of an antenna on its back. So you've got a tiny transmitter on its ankle, a little backpack with an antenna on its back, weighs less than a gram.
Wow.
That's very light. Hey, if you're somebody from the good old US of A, that's definitely less than 5 pounds. I don't know. So it's tiny. It uses a super strong magnetic clasp to hook it to the bird without having to be invasive, but it's also a very strong clasp. And the way they get the data from the tracker is they created basically NFC feeding stations. So when the birds remember there's easy food here every day, they come back.
It downloads the info?
Downloads the info.
Smart.
They take off. Super smart, right?
Scientists. Look at you with the big brain on the scientists.
Except here's the thing, you fucking idiots.
What happened?
You forgot you were fucking with a bird.
Uh-oh.
You remember that super strong industrial magnetic clasp? The one weak point, the one point of failure in this Houdini straitjacket of a fucking tracker on this bird?
Yeah. Uh-oh.
Within a day, Jeff, they put trackers on 5 of these birds. Within a day, all of them Houdini'd out of the fuckers.
All of a sudden, the trackers were on a bunch of mice?
Yeah. The trackers were on on Dotsons going south on I-95. That's right. I-95 goes to Australia now. The infrastructure we have is very good. It turns out infrastructure week worked.
So these birds literally were like, backpack? Come on. You need something stronger. You need something better.
Yeah.
I'm out of this. No
problem.
I don't
shoulder any weight for humans.
Right.
Shoulder your own weight, garbage people. Basically, what happened was the birds worked together to get each other out of the harnesses, Jeff. The moment they noticed harnesses on the other birds, they immediately came over and started working to pick the lock on the harness
other
birds.
What?
Huh?
Where? What?
What are you talking about?
Something on your back.
Oh, shit. That's not mine.
I did not think it was yours. Look at that. I've never seen you wear a backpack before.
Dude, get it off me. Get it off me.
Wait, turn around. Turn around.
I'm turning around.
Okay. All right.
Now
look at look at this thing. This thing can't weigh more than a gram.
Shit. It's lighter than 5 pounds. No wonder I didn't notice it. Get my lockpick tools out from my cheek. Like, these birds, this is a level of cooperation that we did not expect to see from them. So even though the tracking data did not work, even though they have to go back to square one with these trackers, they had no idea that these birds would work together. They've never seen magpies do anything like this. But they immediately work together to remove these harnesses. They don't know whether they found the harnesses to be a parasite because there are some birds, like, I don't know if you've seen, there are some birds that like eat food from these plants that have like really sticky seed pods. And the sticky seeds are like the plant's defense. And so we've seen these birds like pick sticky seeds out of each other's feathers so it doesn't harm them and they're allowed to, they can still fly. But that's a completely different species of bird. Wow. We've never seen this in a magpie.
Smart birds, dude.
Smart birds. even one bird that was considered to be like a too dominant kind of aggressive bird, even that bird was helped out of its harness. They all immediately work together. They immediately recognize any outside influence and try to get rid of it.
This is how they're able to pull off these elaborate pranks. No,
I bet if you
bird.
Put a magnetic clasp on me, it would take me, I don't know that I would get it off.
Yeah.
I was about to estimate, but the answer is it would be until the scientists came back with a snack and a downloader.
I've been meaning to tell you, Anthony, you have a magnetic clasp on your back. It's been there for literally years.
Has it been fucking with my house arrest anklet? Because that would explain a lot.
I think the first clue would have been that easy and accessible food that you've had nearby the whole time that you've visited frequently.
It's just a pile of bachelor chow.
Those packages of Doritos that show up near that strange electronic device every week.
It's mushed Doritos and torn up beef jerky. Covered in a Mountain Dew sauce that shows up every morning in my single man kitchen.
Right near that NFT sensor that's in your kitchen.
Well, the NFT sensor is to keep the crypto bros out.
Yeah.
I keep them out of my apartment as much as possible. So I put an NFT sensor on the door. If you try to walk into my place with a fucking monkey JPEG, you'll get vaporized instantly. That's why I'm under house arrest.
That's right. You've killed
too much violence against the NFT bros.
So many anonymous artists.
They say they're artists, Jeff, but are they? I don't think it's benefiting artists at all.
Oh man.
This is a very interesting thing. You might say to yourself, okay, magpies don't want to be tracked. Let's not track the magpies then. They're obviously too smart. They want their lives to be secret. But here's the problem. We actually kind of need to track magpies right now.
Well, now more than ever, it feels like they've got all our magnetic clasps.
Yeah. I mean, especially as more and more museums begin to open up again and priceless works of art are accessible. We really need to make sure there aren't any bird heists going on.
Yeah.
But more than that, it's for conservation efforts. As there are more and more heat waves in Australia, we are seeing there are two things that sort of correlate to intelligence in animals that are important to this story. Number one, being social behavior in a species and cooperation in a species usually means the species is smarter. Right. So seeing things like, as we work together, we learn from each other and we skip the hard parts of learning certain things ourselves, which allows us all to move forward as a species.
Well, that's what this, it seems like, even though we didn't get the data that we wanted as far as tracking the magpies, some interesting data nonetheless, right? The fact that we learned that they are capable of this kind of socialized, helpful intraspecies behavior seems pretty useful.
Absolutely. Absolutely it is. And I think that's very exciting data for this group, even though it wasn't what they were searching for. So now they're kind of like loose cannons and they'll probably get their badge and their knockless warrants taken away. They'll probably have to go on suspension, but probably with pay. But the number two important thing to learn about animal intelligence, particularly bird intelligence right now, as there are more and more heat waves, we're finding that the heat is affecting the cognitive abilities of animals. Think about how you feel after you're out in the sun all day. Birds are always out in the sun.
Mm.
So without being able to control their own climates, as we get these heat waves and the climate is changing more and more, birds is getting dumber, which in the short term is good for us because I'm tired of their fucking scams.
Yeah.
But in the long term, like if all animals get more stupid and animals start dying out, it also affects the survival rate of chicks. So magpie chicks, their population tends to go down by almost 90% during an intense heat wave.
Wow.
So only 10% of the magpie chicks that would normally survive during a heat wave actually survive. So
maybe this whole thing wasn't about them not wanting to be tracked. They were just too hot in those heavy backpacks.
Oh my God. Do you remember like being bundled up? I mean, what do your kids do when you bundle them up now?
Oh, well, most of the time they need to be bundled up because it's 4 outside right now.
Yeah, but that's the thing. But you get bundled up and you walk outside when you're a kid and you don't know that you're bundled because it's good. You know that your mobility is limited and your vision is limited and you're sweaty.
Oh man, have you ever walked home from school on a hot day and got home and the entire surface of your back where it contacted your backpack was soaking wet?
Baby, I grew up in Florida. That was all day, every day. Oof. It's so gross. So I get
even
it.
Even if you're a magpie, you're not going to like that.
Oh, are you kidding? The sweat in your feathers? Birds sweat?
Not good.
The birds sweat?
I don't think they sweat, but I think they're cold-blooded and I don't think they care, but it still could probably kill them.
No, they don't have sweat glands. They have, they pant and quiver
their
throat.
Birds pant?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I guess they do.
So you've got a bunch of these imagine a bunch of these magpies walking around in heavy backpacks. I mean, not heavy. They're less than a gram. That's less than 5 pounds. So imagine these birds walking around, panting, its throat quivering, heat carried out of its body via lungs and air sacs.
Mm.
I just picture them just like breathing heavy in each other's faces, trying to get backpacks off of each other.
A hot, heavy backpack removal party where they're just get the backpack off of me.
Get the lockpick out of my cheeks. So these scientists,
wrong cheeks,
these these researchers are going to go back to the drawing board with their trackers. They've learned a lot. They're going to try to outsmart these birds, and we're going to see how that goes. But we also want to track these birds for their own good. Listen, we live in a society, bird. You got to give up a little bit of freedom for a little bit of security.
Yeah, come on, baby. Come on. Sign away your rights.
Sign away your rights, bird. Listen, if you really want all your stuff to be private where no one can touch it, you got to get NFTs. You got to put your stuff on the blockchain, bird.
That's right. That's right.
I bet all these birds are NFT bros.
You know what, bird? You took my pin. The least you can do is let me put a backpack on you for a little while. Come on, bud.
Bird's like, look, I'm sorry I took your pin, but here's the deal. I'll make it up to you. I don't have your money anymore, but I can let you in on the ground floor of an amazing investment opportunity.
What?
I have a computer that draws really ugly lions that look like a 12-year-old drew them. And you biped idiots will pay so much money for them.
I'm in. How many can I get? How many can I get?
Well, you gotta move quick because Jimmy Fallon and Paris Hilton bought up most of them. So hopefully
we find out more about what these magpies are doing and where they're going.
Yeah,
how they're dying.
What they're up to.
What can we? How we can save them? Man, the greatest irony is what we do for the thankless birds. We're spending so much time and energy and money.
Well, they're grifters. You can't trust them, Jeff. They're grifters. It's in their nature. Yeah. And you have to listen. We're doing this because we're the better beings and we want what's best for them. But you have to understand, eventually, a bird will turn on you.
They're confidence artists, you know?
And it may seem like they're friends. It may seem like they care. And maybe they do on a level. But remember, the scam is always paramount to them.
Yeah. No, one day you'll be standing there in your science lab at the appointed time when they said they would come back and give you
your backpack,
all of your magnetic clasp backpacks. They said, just wait there at 12 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. Leave your wife and kids, pack a bag.
Yeah.
I'll meet you. I'll wear the vest. We'll take all of my good lion art money and you and I will run away together. And listen, you knew they weren't going to show.
There's a little part of you that knew.
Cut to a shot of the bird on a first class flight, which it doesn't need.
It can fly. Why
it doesn't
is it even
need
paying for that.
Sipping on a champagne, but it's looking out the window. You know, thinking, this is my nature. This is who I am. But there was a life I could have had there.
Yeah. Part of it wanted you. You know?
It would love, listen, that bird would love to settle down and fly straight.
Yeah.
It can't. That's just not in its nature.
Job. Just one more job every time.
That's what's really in its heart. Hey, thanks to Lionfire for sending this one in. If you have a story that...
Lionfire, also the name of our NFT collective.
Oh, don't do that to poor Lionfire. Let Lionfire have their name. Don't sully it. If you want to send in a story, you can do so. I mean, we're not going to stop you. We're not your dads.
No. Do what you want.
Do what you want. You can send that to wehaveconcernsshow@gmail.com. You can post it on the subreddit, which is wehaveconcerns.reddit.com, or you can join the Discord, which is where I found this one. The Discord is a wonderful place where all kinds of concerned citizens are hanging out every week, just having chats, making friends. It's a good time. And if you want access to that, you can get it for just $1 a month over at patreon.com/wehaveconcerns, along with a bunch of other stuff. Go check it out if you would.
So much stuff. Check it out. Hey, speaking of that Discord, our friend Z Synergy Mansfield posted a story there in the Science News channel with two words that are always going to get my attention.
Two words, those one stone. Words,
what's that?
Two words, one stone.
Two words, one stone. That's what they call me. Those two words, Anthony, are space dagger.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're going to need one of those if you're going to kill supernatural beings.
Yeah. Well, this story is a synergy, is a coming together of some of my favorite things. We got your Indiana Jones-esque 1920s ancient heirloom raiding aspect, which I'm going to get to. We got your Dungeons and Dragons-esque weapon from the gods. It's so good. So here's the story.
This is an Egyptian dagger?
Yeah, this is King Tut, King Tutankhamun himself, was
created
buried
by Steve Martin.
not to be confused with the dance craze that swept the late 70s.
Steve Martin didn't create King Tut?
No.
I'm going to write that down.
It's a common misconception, though. He created the jerk. Very, very similar.
No, jerks existed before him, and they'll exist long after he's gone.
Well, it turns out that King Tut was buried in a tomb. We raided King Tut's tomb in the Valley of the Kings in the 1920s, caused all kinds of damage and lost. It was very reckless at that time.
Listen, as much as you might like the film The Mummy or any other film along those lines, boy, did we ever destroy thousands and thousands of years of history on that one.
Oh, man.
Well, we'll just get in with dynamite. The real important stuff is inside. It's not what's written on the dumb walls. It's not the ancient architecture where, like, how did they even do that? We'll blow it up. We'll get to the real shit that's inside, and then we'll bring it home because it's too hot here to look at it.
I didn't walk all the way out here for knowledge. I walked out here for money.
I'm going to bring this back to England where my backpack is not making my back sweaty.
Yes.
And I'm going to display it because I'm a good person.
Is there gold or jewels in there? I want this is rock and stone. I blow it up to get to the money.
How did these idiots know that this gold was worth money? They weren't even smart back then. These idiots had all this gold. They didn't even know it was valuable.
They didn't even have a stick of dynamite like I do. Anyway, so we pulled out a foot-long dagger, among a whole lot of other things, inside the tomb of the pharaoh.
Did we pull it out of the heart of a mummy? Did the mummy start coming back to life immediately?
Well, not immediately. You know, there was a period there where we thought we were safe.
Yeah. Correlation is not causation.
Exactly.
We did steal the dagger and a mummy came back to life.
Two independent events that had nothing to do with one another.
Connect them. Connect them. I dare you.
I dare you. We found this this dagger made of iron. Made of iron. Only problem is It would be another 100 years before the Iron Age started.
Okay, well, someone's got to do it first.
Just because it wasn't
a whole age of iron didn't mean that like one guy wasn't using iron.
Well, that's true. We had found a number of items like this made of iron that date back into the Bronze Age and even earlier.
Like my mom just got a smartphone. That doesn't mean people haven't been using smartphones for years.
Maybe King Tut was an early adopter.
Here's the thing. King Tut was all like, dude, I'm going to buy this. This thing is made of iron. And King Tut's significant other was like, honey, do you really need? I feel like every time something comes out and is made of a new material that isn't stone.
We have a perfectly good stone dagger that you haven't even used in weeks.
Obsidian is so lame now.
No, but you aren't using it. It's sitting around. You know how many times I've had to put it?
Here's the problem. I can't use it because it's not efficient enough. This new one is made of iron. And if I had that dagger, I could do all the projects that I've been wanting to do with it.
This is exactly what you said about the new clay pot set.
It's just corner and it's just piles of different pots and different daggers made of different things. I'm going to get to all that stuff. It's just like, this is the good one. An iron dagger was like the new LiDAR autofocus. Like now I'm going to take pictures.
Yeah.
So we found this iron dagger. Nobody had iron yet.
Yeah. But we've also found a dagger that was made 1,000 years before Tutankhamun was even born. This was, this has happened before. And each case, the iron used in making the dagger has been determined to be from a meteorite. These are space daggers. In fact, in 2016, this dagger from Tutankhamun's tomb was analyzed and determined to be of meteoric origins, a meteorite. How do we know? This was a study. There's a new study that this article is about that was just published in the journal Meteoritics and Planetary Science.
The Meteoritics were my favorite breakdance crew of the 80s.
Yes, they brought their own linoleum.
Here's how I bet we know it's from space instead of just being regular iron. Cursed.
Yeah, well, it's a different when you have a regular old Pharaoh's curse, you just get attacked by the mummy. But when you have a space curse,
glows
so
in the moonlight.
Much different. Yeah, blue light.
Whispers. Longer you hold it, the more it whispers to you.
Yeah,
that's probably how you know.
The difference is the blue light is how he said.
No, the different it glows under the moonlight.
Oh, it glows under the moonlight. You just saying. It has blue
light, but if you are handling
the color of space,
if you are handling a space dagger, though, you should wear a pair of eye strain reducing glasses to eliminate the blue light. Because if you hold it, like, listen, you cannot
keep the sleep. You'll never get to
keep the whispers out. You can't keep the whispers out, no matter what you do. But you can't listen. You only get one pair of eyes.
Yeah,
and you want to be careful. You will eventually. The voices will make you pluck your own eyes out. But before you do that, it's important to think about eye strain and think about the temperature of the light that you're getting from day to day.
How many times, Anthony, have you been lying in bed staring at your meteor space dagger, but right before you go to bed, and then you're like, I gotta go, I gotta get some rest, and you just can't. You set the dagger on your nightstand, and you just can't. You can't sleep. It's because of the blue light.
Never. Keep your cursed dagger in your bedroom, okay? Because it's going to stop you. Just having it there is going to stop you from getting to sleep because you're always going to be checking the dagger and listening to the voices. And then when you wake up in the morning, you're not going to get right out of bed. It's going to cut down on your productivity because you're immediately going to stare into the mesmerizing light of the dagger and think about what the voices are telling you. They say...
Do the voices like me? Have I gotten any likes on the voices?
What's going on with the voices? Like, is there anything cool going on with the voices that I should know about? This is actually, I'm doing work. This is part of my research for work, is thinking about all the murders I'm going to commit in the name of the voices. And so they say that you want to keep your dagger, like on a charger, like on an altar, in your living room, and then you wake up.
Leave it on the altar. Yeah. Leave it on the altar. Don't carry it with you all the time. You don't have to have it with you all the time. There are times during the day where you can listen to the voices and plot the destruction of your enemies. But at night, just leave it on the altar, you know?
I did a murderous voice detox, Jeff.
That's very smart.
5 days in the woods without murderous voices. And I got to tell you, changed my life.
Feel like a new man?
Changed my life. I did come back and immediately start listening to the voices again. Like, it's hard not to. That's just our modern life.
Sure, sure.
But I will say, I'm doing the voices bidding a lot less.
It's, you know, it's baby steps. You gotta do the real work, the self-reflexive work, you know?
How do we tell that it's from space?
It has something that you can actually see this with the naked eye. You don't even need a microscope, although it does show up under a microscope. It has something known as the Vidman-Staaten pattern.
Oh, yeah, sure. A Vidman-Staaten pattern. It would.
Vidman-Staaten pattern. Now, this is something that I need to go on a little bit of a tangent about because it's awesome. So, are you ready for this, Anthony?
Yeah. I believe the Vidman-Staaten pattern is like the third level boss of Wolfenstein the New Blood.
Well, you are not wrong, because listen to this. The Vidman-Staaten pattern is named after,
oh boy,
a guy named Count Eloise von Beck Vidman-Staaten.
Sworn enemy of the Belmonts.
I must be. I mean, the dude's actually a count, okay? And in 1808, he had the job. Listen to the job he had in Vienna. He was the director of Imperial Porcelain Works.
Yo, that's a very well-organized regime.
Right?
Dude, Austrian royalty or whoever was in charge at that point in 1808, like, damn, you're in charge.
Getting it done.
This guy is just in charge of porcelain works?
Yeah, for the empire. Yeah.
That's a well-oiled machine.
I'm telling you what. Okay, so he's working there. And, you know, as one does as a director of Imperial Porcelain Works,
sure,
he is heating iron meteorites. And as he's doing that, he notices there's some color changes on the surface, this differentiation in these various zones as the iron alloys are oxidizing at different rates. Mm-hmm. And he does not publish his findings. He just brings it up casually to his friends at a party, one of whom is Carl von Schreibers, who has an even better title. He was director of the Vienna Mineral and Zoology Cabinet.
Yo, okay. This is like when you work at an office and you just every year you ask them for a raise and they can't get, and they're like, oh, we can't give you a raise, but like, would it make you feel better if we gave you a title? Like, we can give you a title. Like, we want something that reflects how important you are to us. Let me tell you something. The answer is money. That's what reflects how important I am to you.
Right.
But instead they give you like, oh, you can be the vice president of like whatever, of like the fucking paper cabinet where we keep the fucking supplies. That's what this sounds like to me.
Mineral and zoology cabinet. Ooh, there's a whole cabinet? How many other people are on the cabinet? It's just you, Carl. Oh. But I'm the director? Yes.
Director. Can I have an assistant? No, not in the budget.
Anyway, Carl von Schreibers is like, this is huge. This is big. Names this structure after Vidman-Staaten. So it is now known as the Vidman-Staaten pattern. Now, the pattern itself is this really, really cool crosshatch. It actually looks under a microscope like, you know, the exterior of the Borg cube spaceship?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Exactly like that.
Right. It's just where they take, it's kit bashing. They take a bunch of sci-fi garbage and just glue it onto something. And it's like, now that's from space.
Yes, it has that kind of symmetry and tons of right angles and all this. It looks like, tiny crosshatch patterns. And
wow.
The only way that this Vidman-Staaten pattern is possible is when something is cool or is, yeah, is cooled by about 1 degree centigrade per million years.
Space metal.
Space metal. So that is what we saw.
Dope.
Dope, right? So dope.
I want space metal. See, this is the problem. This is why we fight wars over precious metals. This is the problem, is because now I want this.
Yeah. Yeah, you do. And so did
King Tut. It's almost as though it's whispering to me.
So did King Tut. And so evidently have a lot of monarchs and powerful people through the years. In fact, we know that there is another of these, a sword, a Japanese sword that was acquired by the Taisho Emperor.
Yes.
That was also made from a Japanese meteorite.
Yes.
Shirahagi.
Yeah, Shirahagi, I've heard of this sword.
Name. What?
I've heard of this sword because of anime. It's real?
It's real. Yeah, the Shirahagi meteorite was the source of a bunch of Japanese swords that were in the Taisho Empire.
Get fucked. No way.
Yeah. So we know that this is a thing, right? This is a thing that these cultures could not smelt iron yet. The Iron Age had not happened, but they stumbled upon meteorites and were like, dude, I need a weapon made out of this, bro. And then
you would be unstoppable in battle.
Unstoppable.
That's just the truth of it. You would be unstoppable in battle.
No one else has steel, and you do, you know, basically.
Right. Well, right. But also because of the space powers.
Oh, also the space powers. Yeah. You just stab someone and they get space madness.
Yeah. Oh, and then they join your army.
Yeah.
As an undead warrior.
In an instant. Undead warrior. Yeah. Anyway, so how did they forge this stuff? Well, this is the subject of this new study. Again, 2016, we determined that this was actually for sure a meteorite dagger.
And yeah, right, because nobody was even using this stuff yet. And this rock falls to the ground. And the pharaoh goes, or, you know, the Taisho or whoever goes, yo, you see that rock from space? I'm going to need you to make that into some sort of knife for me. And it's like, dude, we don't even know how to do that.
Yeah. Figure it out. You also didn't know how to make the pyramids, and we did that.
Yeah. Well, a lot of us, I mean, honestly, it cost most of us our lives to do that. Like, we died.
Yeah, but not me.
That's true. Not you. You're right. All glory to you.
Thank you.
Listen, this rock is whispering to me, and it's telling me that it wants to be a sword.
Exactly. God told me that you need to make this into a dagger for me.
So if you don't know how to forge weapons like this yet, how do you forge a weapon like this?
Well, this is the subject of this study. So basically, the new study that was just published, they bombarded this thing with X-rays. And
oh, good idea.
Yeah, no, there's nothing problematic about that.
Yeah, good. Make it stronger.
So this is how they described the study. An on-site, non-contact, non-destructive, two-dimensional chemical analysis. So
they just put some stuff on it?
They're observing it non-contact. Okay. So they observe the chemical structure of this thing with tons of X-rays.
Okay.
And what they found was concentrations of iron, nickel, cobalt, and manganese, which I'm assuming is just ground up mangas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've never heard of manganese before. Anyway,
it's like if you read the first volume of something and you're like, it's trash.
Yeah. I'm going to put this with my iron, nickel, and cobalt.
Mm-hmm.
So this is consistent with something that you would find in a meteorite, but there were also these darker sections. And the fact that you can even see the Widmanstätten pattern on this thing indicates that they did not heat it to the temperatures that we would today, or even during the Iron Age, that they didn't heat it enough that the pattern disappeared, right? Because if you heat the iron up enough, that pattern, you know, it's going to melt, and that pattern is no longer going to be perceivable. So they've determined, based on the fact that you can still see the Vidmanstätten pattern, that it was heated at less than 950 degrees Celsius, which is actually pretty low heat for working.
Well, you want to let a dagger simmer. Yes. The trick is low heat over time. That's how you make those really good Gordon Ramsay eggs and a really good cursed dagger.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you keep adding milk to both.
You gotta slow simmer it over a long, long period, you know?
Yeah.
That's where the flavors really come out.
Okay. Yeah.
So these darker patterns, they found out, they thought at first were rust, but it turns out that they were iron sulfide. And that happens. They said that generally occurs as inclusions to these iron meteorites. So how did they make it? When did they make it? Okay. So the chemical analysis doesn't tell you anything about the dagger's origins, but they turn to these tablets, these 3,400 year old tablets known as the Amarna letters, which are these diplomatic documents that kind of, we know a lot about ancient Egypt in the mid 14th century BC because of these letters. And in these letters, they mention specifically an iron dagger in a gold sheath, which was not a common accessory back then because no one had iron.
Right.
And that was given to Amenhotep III, which is Tutankhamun's grandfather, by the king of Mitanni, which is a region of Anatolia. So it wasn't even native to Egypt. So they think that this space dagger that was buried with Tutankhamun is literally a family heirloom received from overseas that was made out of a meteorite.
Wow. I wonder how they even first thought to do it. I mean, I guess they were firing other stuff. They were they had ceramics and other weapons and things like that. I guess they just sort of threw it in and were like, here we go.
Well,
Pharaoh wants a weapon. I hope it turns into one.
to me, this is why it conjured that Dungeons and Dragons fantasy storytelling element, because my imagination immediately leaps to these ancient peoples that revere their leaders and want to present them with something special. And there's literally this thing that comes crashing to the ground, or probably doesn't come crashing to the ground, but is already there. And they find it, they stumble upon it, and it is made of something unlike anything they've ever seen before. And so, of course, there's probably a religious context to it, you know, significance that they give it. And they're like, well, we got to make something out of this, and we won't rest until we figure out how. And it's literally like the dagger passed down, given from generation to generation, because it's so special. There's literally nothing else like it.
Wow. I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to do the same thing with my action figures.
Yeah, you should.
I'm going to pass them down from generation to generation.
Yeah. And your great, great, great grandson will be buried with it.
Yeah. And it will whisper. But that's because it has a pull string in its back. Now, I'm kind of floored by this, honesty. And now I'll ask my follow-up question. But my follow-up question is just, fuck.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's so badass. They also found out that there are gemstones in the dagger's hilt that were attached with lime plaster.
It would have
commonly used
gemstones.
What?
It would have to have gemstones on the hilt.
Oh, of course. Yeah, you can't. I mean, come on. You're not going to just leave a naked meteor dagger. Come on.
That's fucking dumb if you don't add gemstones. It doesn't matter if it's a space rock or not. If I'm the Pharaoh and you bring me a dagger and you're like, this is a dagger from space. It's one of a kind and blah, blah, blah. It's like, cool. Why does it look like you bought it from fucking ancient Target?
Glam that shit up. Come on.
How am I supposed to flex? How am I supposed to flex in the battlefield with this?
Yeah. I mean, I appreciate that it's made from unprecedented space rock that no one else has access to, but it doesn't shine or glitter or nothing.
Yeah. Like, how would idiots know that it's worth something? I need idiots to know that it's worth something.
Be like, well, wait till nighttime when it glows blue.
Fuck, get my gunners. Get my gunner optics gamer glasses. I don't want to strain my eyes. This is rad. I love this.
So rad. Yeah. So rad.
You know, it's weird. This is a tangential thought, but it is kind of related. It does make me think about how rare it is in this day and age that any of us has anything that is unique or handmade. Or
will stand the test of time. Yeah.
You know, like yeah. I have a couple things that were like passed down to me from my grandfather. And, you know, one of them was like, I have a ring that was made for him, which is like, oh, okay. That's something special and specific that was made for him. And it's like everything, I look around at everything I have and it's like, I don't think there's anything I have that is like a unique handmade thing, unless you make it. I mean, you make it yourself.
Right.
I don't have those skills.
Disposable.
I made a custom Game Boy. Like my Game Boy is different colors than most Game Boys, I guess.
Because you made it out of a meteorite?
Yes. Yes. And I'll tell you this. Mewtwo whispers to me at night. But that's just because it's psychic type.
Oh yeah. Well, there you go.
I don't think there's anything cursed about it.
You're lucky you don't have a fire type in there. Because that would be problematic.
Where does this dagger live now?
It doesn't say specifically, but I'm certain it's wherever, you know, King Tut's stuff is.
Right. So in some museum where we keep all the stolen garbage.
Yeah. I guess that's also cool. Had an iron headdress or some other in a.
Oh, gauntlet. Good. Apply it directly to your head. Oh, good.
Yeah.
Smart. I mean, I'm trying to see if I can get the whispers any louder.
Yeah. Get sometimes closer to my face.
I can hear murder, but I can't really hear who. So can we make something that I can just like wear, like a hat that I can wear so the whispers can be as close to me as possible? All the advisors like, I mean, I guess.
The other thing that's wild about this is that these are items that are kind of like from their perspective are from the future. I mean, they have no way of knowing that, but these are the kinds of things that would be commonplace
right.
in just a couple of centuries, you know, but for there's no analog to that for our times. There's nothing to compare it to where you could have something. Well, I mean, maybe we just don't know.
I mean, how would you know?
How would you know? You would never know.
But how
the
would
idea
you know?
Of having something that is special now and unique now, but in a couple of hundred years is everybody has.
I think the way that we look at that now is via like technology trickle down. Right. Like we look at all of
sure.
these, you know, like if yeah, you look the, at like it, the things that like NASA used in right. like the '50s that now are like in every home, like that.
Yeah.
Sort
or like
of thing.
A computer that fit in a whole room that there's only three of them in the world in the early '70s.
Right. That now is like,
yeah,
I could emulate 100 of them at once.
Right.
On my calculator.
Yeah. Right.
You know? So I think
phone
that's
can play every video game that I idolized in the '80s.
Right.
Needed an entire, you know, arcade.
So, I mean,
machine.
It's not, I mean, is it a one-to-one? I think kind of because we're talking about something that felt very unique and special and revered that turned into an everyday tool. And so I think for right. us in this time, yeah, it's technology. It's stuff like internet technology. It's stuff like phones and we're living in the middle of that right now. You know,
right.
we're, you know, you talk about like this happened 100 years before the Iron Age. Like we were born into the information age.
Right.
And so we're actually kind of lucky because, I mean, if you think about it that way, it's kind of cool that we're on the cusp of this thing.
Yeah.
And the voices
cool, except
do,
that it's
angry voices do whisper at me from the internet.
That's true. There's a lot of similarities.
It does make me more violent.
Yeah.
So I think really, Jeff, the iron dagger was inside of us all along.
Yeah.
But not in like a lethal way.
Give me the internet so that I may smite my enemies.
Yes.
Yeah.
Give me the internet that I might smite my enemies. Jeff Cannata, 2022.
The Trolls Creed.
Hey, thank you to Synergy for sending in this story. I think this is really cool.
Such a cool one. Yeah.
I love this. Once again, if you have a story that you think we should cover, hit up that email. We have concernshow@gmail.com or the subreddit. Or of course, Jeff, they can hit that Patreon.
Ooh, that Patreon at patreon.com/wehaveconcerns. Hey, also, there are so many awesome stories submitted every single week. You can peruse them by being part of the Discord. A lot of those stories post on the Discord. But also, as part of our Patreon exclusives, Anthony and I are doing bonus videos where we talk about stories that we didn't actually bring into an actual episode, but are still fascinating and worth discussion. So we're doing bonus stories, and you can get those as a perk on patreon.com/wehaveconcerns as well.
Check it out. What do you think is the most likely thing in your home to whisper to you? What has the draw and the pull over you?
I mean, it's probably my cell phone, sadly.
Yeah, I think mine is my Switch.
Your Switch.
My Switch whispers to me all the time. It's like, don't do shit.
Oh, no, the actual thing is the tubs of ice cream in my freezer.
Yes.
Space ice cream.